This episode of Storyworthy is sponsored by Scribd, the subscription book service that lets you read and listen like you own every book in the world.
Yes, with Scribd, you get unlimited access to more than 500,000 ebooks and 30,000 audiobooks on your phone, your tablet, and your web browser, all for just $8.99 a month.
But if you go to scribd.com/storyworthy right now, you can get started with 3 free months. That's 3 months of unlimited ebooks and audiobooks.
And it helps support this show. So go to scribd.com/storyworthy. That's scribd.com/storyworthy.
And we thank you.
Yo, this is Pauly Shore. What's up? What's up? You listen to Storyworthy. Yeah.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. My name is Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from the Encino Municipal Golf Course in Encino, California.
What are we doing here?
First of all, I love to watch people play golf. I don't like to play myself, but we're here because our guest tonight is the one and only Pauly Shore.
That's
and
true.
One of his
Pauly Shore.
First major hits, Encino Man.
Oh, I didn't know that's the angle you were coming at.
Well, I'm obtuse.
No, or, okay. No, it's
something
true.
Like that.
Pauly Shore, actor, comedian, director, writer, all those things. He is here
golfer?
Tonight.
We don't know. But let's find out.
He brings forth the topic my first time on stage, so I thought for sure you'd go to Wisconsin.
Well, that's where the story is going to take place, so I figured I throw you a curveball, which is something you really shouldn't do in golf.
I see. Okay, well, Pauly's story is called My First Time on Stage.
I'm anxious to hear this because Pauly Shore comes from comedy royalty.
Comedy blood.
Comedy royal blood. Exactly. His father, comedian, his mother, owner of the Comedy Store.
Yeah, it's a tremendous, the history is really there.
Yeah, exactly.
For sure.
Exactly.
But before we bring our guest on, can you tell me the first time you were on stage, Hannes?
Well, the first time I ever really did stand up per se was, as always, a weird way. I've told the story before. This will be a truncated version. I'm at the University of Wisconsin, and I'm in this rhetoric course, which is called, it was like humor and literature. And I thought, oh, well, that'll fit right in with my interests. It was taught by the driest professor on the face of the earth. And it was like a very obscure humor from like a little Mark Twain, but then a lot of people that you never heard of writing in the 1800s. And like everything you read wasn't funny. It was just racist and horrible. And
yeah.
And you realize what people thought was funny in like 1840. Yeah, not completely offensive today.
Yeah, I had a very hard time reading personally. And I don't, you know, whatever this says about me, fair enough. But like To Kill a Mockingbird, I can't do it. I am not.
By the way,
my mind doesn't work
okay,
like that.
If you were thinking To Kill a Mockingbird was a comedy, that may have been your
racist.
Yeah, but see, that was no, but that's when you read To Kill a Mockingbird, it's supposed to teach you that racism is bad. Now imagine reading a comedy like a little just sort of a sketch or something from 1840 in which the premise isn't slavery hilarious and good.
Okay.
You see, you're not buying into the premise, so therefore it is absolutely impossible for you to...
I don't want to spend the time, I'll be honest with you.
I don't feel like fun.
I have the time.
So anyhow,
I don't want to take the time.
The upshot of the story is that I decide that instead of writing a paper, which is impossible for me because I'm an idiot, I'm going to give an oral presentation, which is just going to be jokes. And the day before, I get a call from my mother saying that my father, who has called her for the first time in like 5 years, and he's like... He's talking about the CIA used to bug their bedroom, and he's out talking all this crazy shit. And it's
is this
like,
the first time you've heard of your father's mental illness?
No, it's the first time
illness?
I've heard of it. It's like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So then I go and I do the thing. I kill. 3 days later, I go back to Milwaukee and find my dad's dead body because he'd been suicide. And that was exactly the same week I first did stand-up comedy.
So... it took something like, seriously, your father committing suicide, that's what put you on stage.
No, the weird thing is it happened the same week.
It happened
literally at the same time.
Yeah.
Because my life is bad screenwriting. Because if writing a bad screenplay, you would be like, you know, as he went on stage.
Right.
His, you know, and you would cut back and forth between the tragic and the comedic and all that shit.
No, but I think that this makes a lot of sense, though, because there was something, a really huge event happened in your life. And it kind of gives you this, like, it doesn't fucking matter anymore attitude. You may as well get on stage.
Right. Well, the weird thing is I had that attitude beforehand, but it's just.
You've always been angry.
I am angry. Listen, but you know what's good for that? Donuts.
First time I was on stage, October 1993. And it was right after my ex-husband got another girl pregnant. And my first joke that I ever thought of and why I kind of got myself to go on stage is because I thought to myself, you know, my ex-husband got another girl pregnant and I'm flexible. But not that flexible.
Yeah.
And that was like the only joke I had. But I felt like that joke was so strong. I felt like
I'm sure that this is the greatest joke that was ever written.
Right. So I got on stage. I did that one joke. And then I had another 4 minutes and 45 seconds to kill. But that was an event in my life. My ex-husband, you know, and I splitting up and him moving on. And, you know. That got me on stage. I have a feeling a lot of comedians have that sort of thing.
Yeah, a lot of people are just like, they want to when they're just waiting for something to shove them.
Well, I'm anxious to hear what Polly has to say. He's got going on. As you know, he's constantly reinventing himself, Hannes.
He's like Madonna, but with less muscle.
Lesser costume, is really. But he has a brand new podcast out right now called Interested. And I'll tell you something. It's quite interesting.
Yes. But tell me why. You were telling me about the premise of it.
Well, the premise, we'll talk to Polly about it. But okay. The premise is it just kind of reminds me of he's interviewing people that he admires or he's interested in. And so it's a thorough interview as if Marc Maron was doing it. But then what sets it apart from other podcasts is the format in which he is also talking with somebody at the same time who has to do with a guest. So he's sitting on the sideline with Andrew Dice Clay listening to the interview he already did with Rodney Dangerfield's wife.
So it's very meta.
So he and Dice are listening together, and then Dice is commenting. So we kind of go back and forth. It's very good.
It's as if Dice Clay is the insane voice in your head or whoever.
it's a very clever idea. It's very unique. And in podcasting now, since everybody has a podcast, it's hard to find a new voice. So
yeah, exactly.
Once again,
no, that's awesome.
Polly has
because the whole thing where you interview people we like, it's like, oh yes, we do that. But then see another layer.
There's another layer. So
brilliant.
We're here and
brilliant.
Then he just went.
Oh no, we're here and he's
listen, you guys,
there.
Before Polly Shore comes on and tells his story, I did want to remind you that if you'd like to support the Storyworthy podcast, that would be great. And the simplest thing you can do, Hannes,
yes,
Hannah, Maria, is you share Storyworthy on your social media. You see what I'm saying? So you go about your
day. Get the word out there.
You go about your day, but then you, hashtag Storyworthy. Give us a little at Storyworthy. Throw a little love in the story direction.
Right.
And it costs you nothing.
Costs you nothing.
But perhaps it'll.
And you know what else costs you nothing? You go to storywithpodcast.com and you click on the Amazon link.
Yes.
You can buy all of your Civil War pornography. As usual, and yet we get a little taste.
And it doesn't cost them anything extra.
Doesn't cost you a thing.
Not at all. Also, don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Storyworthy. You know I love tweeting.
You do love the tweeting. I am still sending people letters through the mail.
That would be the only thing. Did I tell you my daughter said to me, we were walking into the apartment after school one day, and she says, and I always flip up the mailbox and then it flips back down. And she goes, why do you always check that, Mama? I said, you know what? We used to get mail, okay?
Yeah.
We used to get like checks and I had money. Remember?
Yeah.
She said to me a couple of weeks ago, she says, Mama doesn't have a job. She just auditions. You know, I used to work all the time.
Yes,
before
right.
You came around.
That's right. That's why she doesn't have money or anything to do with show business. She's going to be a doctor.
Oh, we'll see. All right, you guys, hang tight wherever you are because Polly Shore is on his way here. Next time on Storyworthy, we have writer Wendy Wilkins.
And I'll be talking about the one time I fucked a movie star.
That's next time on Storyworthy. Hey, Christine, why don't we give people a little information about our newest sponsor, Scribd.com?
Oh, yes, we should do that. Okay, Scribd is the subscription book service that gives you unlimited access to the largest library of ebooks and audiobooks out there. And if you go over to Scribd.com/Storyworthy, you can get started, Hannes, with 3 free months.
Yeah.
That's Scribd.com, so it's Scribd.com, and you get 3 free months.
Yeah, and they've got over 500,000 ebooks, including true stories by people like Sarah Silverman, Love Her, Kelly Oxford,
No idea who that is. Patti Smith, awesome.
That's right. And also, they've just added 30,000 audiobooks to their library, including books by like Amy Poehler, Alan Cumming, and John Lithgow.
John Lithgow. I love John Lithgow so much.
I know you do. I know you do. So anyway, it's all the books you could ever want or read or listen to on your phone, tablet, and web browser for just $8.99 a month. But like I said, if you go to scrib.com/storyworthy right now, they'll set you up for 3 free months to get started. That's 3 months of unlimited reading and listening, and then you're also supporting this show.
Right, so that's scrib.com/storyworthy.
I love this.
Hi, this is Yakov Smirnov. In America, you listen to Story Worthy. In Russia, Story Worthy is you.
And we're back. We've left the golf course, and now we're at the Encino Velodrome, where we're busily racing. I know, we're racing our cars around.
Yeah.
Oh, that's okay.
Just looking at everything, it's so pretty.
It is, it is. We have our van, the Story-Worthy Van of Truth,
but
which
dude,
we drive around.
You know what I'm trying to tell you? Nobody's
yes.
in the juice, dude, because we're in Encino, man, bro. Nobody's
yes! We're doing
Wait,
the finger thing.
Are you saying we're at the go-karts? Where
the Velodrome is an oval bicycle racing track opened in 1963.
Yeah, okay, but they do go-karts there?
No.
Oh, okay, it's bicycles.
Bicycles.
All right.
Go-karts.
No, I'm
leaving.
No, listen, Pauly Shore is coming on in just a second here, but I wanted to mention he's got this brand new documentary coming out on Showtime, and it is called Pauly Shore Stands Alone. And the last scene, or the second to the last scene, he's on a go-kart. And it's such a beautiful scene because it makes him look very childlike, which I believe he may be. We're going to find out. It's very sweet.
He's a child. He's a man. He's a man-child.
He's all these
That's
things.
What I say.
And he's here right now. All right, you guys. Pauly Shore, as I said, he's an actor, comedian, director, writer, and producer who starred in several comedy films, as you know, Hannes.
Several.
And he
many.
Kept making them.
Many,
kept
I would
making
say.
Them. And like I said, he has this new documentary coming out on Showtime. And I'll tell you something. It's very sweet. You will be very surprised at this documentary.
Most comedians inside are just big marshmallows.
He's part marshmallow. I believe you may be right.
He is. He's a little charred on the outside.
He's also got a new podcast out called Interested, which I find fascinating as well. So it's kind of like, here we go again. Pauly Shore, he's in our life again.
He's back.
He's back,
baby.
All right, you guys.
He's not like Ebola. I'm kidding. He's not like Ebola.
You can find him at his website, PaulyShore.com, or on Twitter, at Pauly Shore. All right, you guys, wherever you are, put your hands together for Pauly Shore.
It was tough getting up here. The Encino's crazy, bro. It's so far. It's far. I haven't been out here since I did the movie, so thanks for having me.
Oh, no, bro.
Yeah. Well, my first time I ever went on stage was, I think it was 1987 or 6. I think it was 1986. And it was at, 1986. And it was at a place in Culver City called the Alley Cat Bistro, which was also a restaurant, which was a restaurant. And they happened to be doing comedy night that night. And my dad was friends with the owner lady there. I think her name was Janet. And my dad would do shows at the Alley Cat Bistro in Culver City. And he said to Janet, he's like, my son is just going to start doing comedy. Can I please put him on your stage? So she said yes, because it was my dad, and my dad is a known comedian at the time and still is known, but was doing a lot of stand up back then. And I went on stage and I did really well. Actually, I actually killed. And I ended with a big dance number. And after, my dad says, where are you going? I said, I got to go to the Odyssey, bro. I got to go party with my friends. And he's like, but we came together. And I left my dad in the parking lot. No, I took him. I dropped him off at home. Because I said to myself, I said, this is going to be my first time on stage, and it's going to be terrible. You know, everyone's first time on stage is terrible. And then I didn't think about it. You know, I just didn't think how as comics, we're all in our head and we're all like always in our shit. Like, I just didn't think about it. And that was probably the reason why I did really well. And then after that, the next 10 times I bombed, I did really bad. And ever since then, you know, I've been bombing and doing good and mixing it up and you know what I mean? But that was my first time on stage. I did really well because I didn't care and I just kind of went up there and just said fuck it. You know what I mean? I got my first joke. You want to hear my first joke?
Yeah, I'd love to.
I grew up in Beverly Hills. My maid's Mexican. My mailman's black. My gardener's Japanese. A day at my house is like a day at the DMV. And Angel Salazar wrote that joke for me.
That's very funny.
Isn't that funny?
And so how long were you on stage at the Alley Cat?
It was probably like 10 to 15 minutes.
And are you
really
joking
that
about...
Long? Wow.
That is a long time.
Especially for the first time.
Did you have it written out?
Kinda. Yeah, I was going to Beverly Hills High School. I had some jokes about... I did a joke about, the Lakers. I said the Lakers just traded or just got this new player, Bob McAdoo. That sounds like something you do after you eat at McDonald's. Just kind of like... one-liner shit.
And you were how old?
I was 17.
17.
But how many comics do you think you had seen at that time?
Oh, growing up?
Well,
since I was four.
Yeah. So you'd literally been watching and absorbing timing and writing through... since you were 4 years old.
Yeah, but that didn't mean that I knew how to tell jokes.
No, I know, but
I wasn't.
But you knew to come from a place of truth.
I guess. I mean, you know, I'm still trying to figure it out.
But
you
started with, I went to Beverly Hills High School. I mean, that says that right there. That speaks volumes.
Yeah.
So that was truthful. It wasn't like you were telling just jokes.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah.
And so that starts, were you working blue right off the top?
I don't remember.
Well, grandma. Are you working blue? What are you doing with the penis jokes?
But Polly does. You do work very blue.
Everybody works blue nowadays.
Yeah. Well, no, not necessarily. Hey. What do you mean? I don't think that's true at all.
That's not true.
When
you guys, can you focus on me, please?
I'm sorry.
Stop arguing.
Oh, my God.
You know, I only have a certain amount of time. Please just
that's
focus.
True.
All right, listen.
It's like I'm looking at you 1.5 times because I'm looking at your actual face, and then there's a half a picture of half your face. So it's like you're half a billion over. Oh, can I ask you? I wanted to ask you about Sam Kinison. Now, you were.
That's going to cost you money because people want to know a lot about. And times are tough for me. I'm clicking the rooms.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
So interesting.
Yeah, you know what I mean. I can't just go into Sam Kinison's stories. No, that's a whole other podcast, bro.
Yeah.
No, but just my thing is his brother Bill owned the first club I ever really worked at in Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, wow.
So Sam was our...
My mom went to school in Madison.
Yes, at the University of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
It's an awesome school, isn't it?
Yeah.
You've seen it.
It's
amazing. He was our first headliner. Like, with Sky Comes Out, we're like, okay, great. And they bring out Sam. He's not famous yet.
That's awesome.
And he's in a basement on State Street in Madison. Just
that's great.
Tearing it up.
Doing good?
Oh, it's fantastic.
That's
but
great.
We're like these know-it-all punk kids. We're like... You know, I guess this guy could be famous if he just tone it down a little bit.
Oh, that's great. Right? Yeah, yeah.
Like a year later, he's on Letterman. And we're like, oh, I see. We didn't know what the fuck we were talking about.
Well, I know what Polly is saying, though, because everybody knows his history, how Sam Kinison was his babysitter and he grew up with these comics. And, you know, Polly would be trying to go to sleep in his house, but he couldn't because there was a party going on downstairs.
Yeah, it was always like a party. My mom was trying to make up for lost time.
And you would walk downstairs and you'd say, you guys, you got to keep it down.
Very seriously. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And that would get you so many laughs, right?
Yeah, they would laugh at me.
Because you were being truthful.
Yeah, I was
and in the moment.
Yeah, and that's when I knew I wanted to be a comedian, which was when I would just go downstairs, like, you know what I mean? You know,
being yourself, just being normal.
And there would be like all these people in there getting fucked up. And I really had, it was 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And I had to get up at school at 7 a.m.
Who took you to school?
Comedians.
Whoever was working.
Or my mom's Thai help that lived in the house.
Yeah.
Because my mom even to this day at the Comedy Store, there's like Thai bar managers.
Interesting.
So she always had like Thai people work there. So it was like a lady, there was Suni and Ted. Ted was the bar manager and Suni was married to Ted. And she would take me to school.
And why Thai, do you think?
I don't know.
They're good looking people.
I don't know. They're good workers, I guess.
Good workers?
Yeah,
okay.
My mom liked them. Yeah. Me and my mom really like Asians.
Interesting.
Yeah, like I see Bobby Lee, I have to touch him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
I
Bobby Lee was one of my first friends out here in Los Angeles.
Cool.
And we went to...
Yeah, he enjoys being touched.
Yeah, we went to Medieval Times once together.
Oh, wow.
And that's a good memory. So I do want to talk about your documentary.
Or as he says, Medieval Times. Medieval.
This documentary, Polly Shore Stands Alone, it is so unique because we've seen you in this caricature way for so long and all your movies and even when you did like Polly Shore is Dead, you're still this real jokester coming through. And now we see you on tour, Hannes, in Wisconsin. 5 gigs in Wisconsin.
Nice.
Which you couldn't get more in the middle of nowhere. I mean, you know, a lot of this documentary is shot, you know, it's kind of like on
America's Dairyland.
It's almost shot like an on the road movie.
Yeah.
And you see so, you know, I grew up in Pennsylvania, of course. So, you know, it's just this farmland and the snow and you can hear the crunching of the snow and it's white and gray. Mm. There's no leaves. There's nothing green. And it's just this trudging real person going gig to gig.
Yeah. People don't understand what stand-up comedy is such a craft in that it's a profession. Yeah.
It's almost like war, you know what I mean? Like you see these army soldiers out here with their pins and their beautiful hats, and then but then like they go out there and they go and they get dirty.
Do it, right. And dirty, there's nothing funny about it.
No.
And so you're Pauly Shore.
Yeah, you're trudging through, yeah.
And you've had comedy in you your whole life, yet you are in these gigs and you have a clicker. Mm. And you're going around the bar or the room and you're clicking the seats, making sure that the number of seats that you come up with is what the club owner told you. Mm-hmm. Because you're getting paid based per
percentage,
ticket.
Yeah.
And how many seats are filled or how many seats there are? How many seats are filled?
Well, you get based on how many butts you put in the seats.
Right, exactly. Okay.
You get
so
based on,
you have to agree on how many seats are there in the room.
To begin with.
And these guys aren't honest, right, to begin with. That one guy was off like 40 seats.
Yeah, he's like, oh, I didn't count all these over here. Yeah.
And you're like, wait a minute, $25 a ticket, 40 seats.
Yeah.
Comedy club owners are notoriously odd people. Let's say that.
It's yeah, they like, don't. A lot of them don't just appreciate you coming through. They'd rather, like, you know, scam you. They're more interested in scamming you a couple $100.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's why when you click the seats, they can't argue with that.
Right.
You know what I mean? There's a certain amount of seats and there's a certain amount of people. And then, like, that's what you get paid.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And as a nice gesture, I always do percentage deals most of the time based on the fact that I don't want anyone to lose.
Right.
Do you understand? Because I don't want to go out and like, oh, I want $10,000 for this gig and I don't sell the tickets and then they're writing me a check for $10,000 and they lost.
Right.
I always want to leave.
A win-win-win.
A win-win-win.
It's interesting in the documentary how likable you are.
Mm.
Everybody seems to really like you and they seem to trust you and they show you just carrying your luggage through the shitty parking lot, putting your shit in the trunk, eating the shitty breakfast in the in the hotel lobby.
Yeah, that was great.
Which I actually always enjoy a little breakfast bar. I'll be honest with you.
Wait, did they have the waffle thing where you make your own waffle?
Oh yeah, but you can't eat that. So disgusting.
Oh no, I'd go for that. I'd totally go for that.
No.
Then they've got like those, you know, the milk container. It's fantastic.
I write little tiny boxes of cereal. Oh, I love
So whether somebody likes your films or don't like your films that you've done, you could never watch this documentary and think like, that guy's full of himself. Because it comes across very, very sweet.
Mm. Being on the road is very humbling.
So do you want people to know that you're sweet?
He's blushing. I guess he does.
I just, you know, at the end of the day, I wanted to make a documentary about what I was going through at that time. I wanted to capture that tour and I wanted to capture the stuff that was going on in my life personally. I was, you know, very sad, you know, dealing with my mom's sickness and my relationship with my siblings and I wanted to get love from the fans. And I was just kind of like, you know, it's almost like a singer, like writing a song at a time in their life where they're sad and that song comes out beautiful.
Wow. So,
because I was like at a place where I was. I'm not that guy anymore. You know what I mean? That's kind of who I was a year or two ago whenever I did it.
Interesting.
You know what I mean?
Just sitting across from you, you seem like you're still a very sweet guy. Or
I'm talking about that tour.
You're not in that place.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because like at that time, like I was moving my mom out of the house.
Right.
And that house is fucking gnarly, dude. It's like 40 years of all that shit.
An enormous home.
It's a big house. It's like
overlooking the comedy.
No, that's not the house. This is the other house. This is the house that the comics went in, and this is my childhood house.
And so at the top of the documentary, the whole thing tells a story. The documentary tells a story about how he's got to tell, you know, his mom.
I got to sell this house.
Yeah, and you got to
get one's here. My siblings aren't here.
And where
do they live? So it's all on me, you know what I mean?
Where do they live, your siblings?
They live, one lives in Portland, and the other ones live in San Diego.
Have you ever collaborated with your siblings? I understand you don't really necessarily speak with them a lot, but have you collaborated with them in the past on different comedy deals and movies and things you've done?
A little bit here and there. I'm kind of like a facilitator for the store. You know, I do is I take my relationships that I have and I bring the Comedy Store management or attorneys, and they usually take them because my family trusts my judgment, you know, on the people that I work with, you know. So for instance, the attorney that's at the Comedy Store now was my attorney, you know what I mean? So okay. I'm like, yo, this guy's cool and he'll work good, so you guys, I think you guys should, you know.
Yeah, so that's the producer in you. That's the producer in you pulling it together.
Exactly. That's kind of like, I call myself kind of like the facilitator. I don't do any of the day-to-day stuff, and I'm not in charge of anything, but I like to work on my own stuff, you know? Yeah. But I like to, you know, and I do that with everyone. I don't like to just do that. One of the things I get off on the most is introducing people to other people.
Yeah, you know, and that I mean? Is I really showed.
Like, I really like to do that.
That's because shown it's, very clearly.
Whatever happens in that relationship,
like,
I don't know, but I think that, you know what I mean? You know, to helping people out. And
almost
just
like a matchmaker.
Yeah, like a matchmaker.
And you do this in the documentary with a stripper.
Oh, right.
And
it seems to me
you have such a soft spot for strippers. And I'm not saying that in like a sexual way, but you seem to really care about girls, strippers, porn stars.
Yeah, because they're damaged. And
they wouldn't be in that business if they weren't.
Yeah, but underneath the name of the, you know, Savannah or Trixie, there's a human being under there.
No, I understand.
There's a human being under there. And like my mom treated the comics that same way. You know what I mean? So
motherly way.
Yeah. So I treat these girls, you know, in a way where, you know, I don't take advantage of them. And I like to make sure they're okay. You know what I mean?
I think that is incredibly kind. Yeah. And when you guys see the documentary, there's this scene where this girl, you know, she is clearly damaged. Mm. And she doesn't seem to know, you know, she doesn't know what she's confused. And you say, listen, I'm going to help you get a spot here dancing at this club. Mm. Come on up and I'll introduce you to the girls. Mm. And the girl says, no, I don't want to go. Mm. And she says it so emphatically. I thought, Polly, leave her alone. She doesn't want to go up there because I didn't understand what you were doing. Mm. And then she follows you and you introduce her to these girls and they take her in.
Yeah.
So then they call her name. She gets on stage and you kind of made that happen.
Yeah. And who knows? Like, I don't know, like, you know, but the thing is, it's she worked there before.
Yeah.
It wasn't like she wasn't a dancer
but
before.
But there was a fight.
Yeah, I guess she left on whatever term she left, but it's not like she didn't know the club and know all the people that work there. So I was like, yo, babe, like, this is like your family and maybe you can work here again. And
it was just like Pauly Shore's like freaking Dr. Phil on the road, man. Yeah, it's just like cleaning up business.
Awesome. Yeah,
that's great. Yeah, you have a very, like you said, facilitator, but also producer vibe about you. Mm. Like most comics, the clicker thing, it's like most comics do not have the wherewithal or the follow through. They would love to bitch about getting screwed over by a club owner. They're not going to do anything about it.
They're
not going to make the effort to go and add it up and then have the confrontation with the guy.
Right.
And that's why club owners get away with it, because most comics are like, I'm just so worried about being loved by strangers. Again, you're like, you start putting your producer hat. You're like, nope. And that's the same thing with, like, you're describing with helping these
people. And I love the road. I really do. I mean, Sam Kennison took me on the road years ago. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, my body has to leave LA every 3 weeks at least. Otherwise, I get crazy.
When you worked with Kennison, you were like a character. There was a character attached.
Well, I wouldn't say I was so much a character. I mean, the Wheeze and all that shit is kind of who I was back then.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I dressed like that.
That was the MTV thing.
It wasn't like Pee Wee Herman, where he was Paul Rubens over here. And then over here, he's Pee Wee Herman. It's like, I dressed with scarves and I dressed with... That's how I dress, you know. That's how I look. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No,
it was a party. It was fun. You know
I bet it was.
Yeah, it was fun.
And you say that when you go on the road, it gives you that unconditional love. That right now your parents are elderly and your mom's not well and you don't have a wife.
Right. Yeah.
Wow. Way to bring the room down.
No, I don't mean to bring the room down, but you know, I'm sure you've had many, many girlfriends, and it seemed at this point you'd think you'd be on your third wife.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you like kids?
I like dodging and weaving.
Yeah. Yeah. You like kids?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I love kids and I would probably love to have a kid, but it's one of those things that, like, I assume it's like, I don't want a kid. I don't want a kid. And then all of a sudden you get a girl pregnant and then, like, you have the kid and you're like, oh my God, this kid's the best thing in my life.
It's like you find a puppy or a kitten.
Yeah, I hear that story.
As soon as you find a kitten in the thing, and then how do you take care of that kitten or that puppy?
You want to nurture it.
Okay. Yeah. Right. And then you times that by like 1,000 million and then you're fucked.
I have this girl that I see right now. She wants me to get her pregnant.
I'll tell you something.
What?
Don't do that, man.
Don't do it.
No.
Don't. Well, you just said for me to have a kid.
No, I didn't. And in fact, I said, once you have a kid, you're kind of fucked because at the end of the day, mm-hmm. somebody's going to die. Mm. You are or they are. And there's going to, you know what I'm just saying? Yeah. You bring it, I have one child. It's so much pain. Mm. Yes, it's beautiful. Yes, it's amazing. Yes, she's great. But it breaks my heart almost more than maybe I love her. I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
What breaks your heart about her?
Because I'm so
eventually
worried.
You will
and
leave
because
her.
I will leave her. She will leave me. Somebody
yeah,
will
but
die.
You're a crazy
she will be
chick.
In pain. I know.
You
Tell
know?
Me about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah.
Tell me
so
about
that's,
it.
You know, I'm from.
No. I spent an hour and a half in her classroom just this morning helping. She's second
sure.
grade.
Yeah.
Well, no, I do it every
that
Thursday. I do this
hysterical.
Little thing. It is so funny. So, right. like today, we're doing vocabulary words, and one of the words is cute. It's the long U, Hannah.
Yeah, Hannah.
And I say, now we're going to write a sentence about cute, like Miss Christine is cute. And they all look at me like,
well, I like how you just force these.
Yeah,
I need
exactly
approval
right.
from you, 7 year olds.
That's
right. Write that I'm cute.
They are my audience, and that's exactly what I need. Okay, here's what I want to ask you, Pauly Shore. This is important.
This is important.
Is the Comedy Store haunted?
I don't know.
I think it is.
Okay.
Did Yakov Smirnoff build the green room?
I don't know.
Does he claim to be? We had him on
he
the show.
Does.
Did he claim
he
to
claims,
build the green room?
If he did, then I'm sure he did.
Your mother really
My
took him.
Mother.
Your mother really took him as well as all these other comics. Yeah. As you said, she's like the mother to all comics. Under her wing, when Yakov came here,
yeah,
he became
very,
he's
very
become a good
much
friend of mine.
So, very much so.
Right. And so she says, Yakov, what does your father do? And Yakov says, my father is a builder mm-hmm. and an inventor. And she says, then you bring your father to Hollywood and I'll give him a job. So Yakov's father,
I remember
no
that.
English,
yeah, yeah.
comes out, and apparently Yakov and his dad built the belly room.
The belly room?
The belly room
yeah,
or the green room?
The belly room. The belly and the, no,
the
green room off
the green
of the back
room
there.
Next
or maybe the belly room as well.
Yeah, I don't know.
Now, I ran the belly room in, I don't know, late 90s for a couple of years. It was called Thursday Night Funnies. I did not name that show.
Mm.
Ah.
If I had a show at the Comedy Store, you think I would call it, and it's on Thursday nights, would I call it Thursday Night Funnies? The worst name ever. But the point is,
well,
up in that belly room.
Wednesday Night Tragedies
now,
on Monday afternoon.
It could have been faulty wiring. I'm not saying it wasn't.
That's
but,
hilarious, faulty wiring.
No, but the lights would go on and off in the belly room. You didn't want to be in the green room alone. There's some creepy vibes going on.
I've always
on.
Heard that, and, you know, but I've never experienced any actual spiritual things anywhere.
So you have or you have not? Pauly, you have never felt a funny feeling in the Comedy Store?
No, I felt some funny babes up, though.
Hey!
Well,
whoa, at the top of the belly room. Stairs, babe!
Speaking about that, I have this friend named Frank Nicotero, comedian from Pittsburgh, and he says that he was working a show in Orlando, and the MC said that you hold the record for the most blowjobs in the green room. Is that true?
No comment. I don't know. I don't know who's getting blown in the green room. And how the fuck do they know? They don't have cameras on me.
Listen, well, what do you mean they don't have cameras
Let
on
me
you?
Pull up the
you
footage
in the fucking green room.
You just did a documentary.
Yeah,
on
but
the-
not. Come on. Not in the green room. Where? The Orlando Improv?
Listen, these wait. Are the rumors going on about you. They don't know how
don't
sweet
know.
You are yet because the documentary.
Well, wait a minute. There's not
how's
a disconnect
that, yeah.
between getting blowjobs and being sweet.
Yeah.
Mr. Rogers actually holds the PBS record for
there
blowjobs.
You That's there you go. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Exactly.
Listen, I do love your new show, Interested. Mm. You heard me talking earlier about how you have reinvented. I mean, in a way, it's a new format that I don't think podcasting has seen yet.
Yeah. I wanted to do something that was different. I mean, everyone, as you know, has a podcast. Everyone is like trying to get their stuff out there all the time. And I just wanted to do something before I did something, whatever it is that I do, I wanted to do something different. So I was working with my agents and we're just talking and blah, blah, blah. And then together we kind of came up with the format and it developed. It wasn't like, you know.
Well, it reminds me. First of all, do you listen to any podcasts on a regular
basis?
Not
really.
Have you never listened to WTF, Mark Maron?
I've been on it. I haven't listened to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No, I just don't. I don't really like computers.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Do you carry an iPhone?
I can totally.
I have an iPhone. Yeah,
I can totally get into that because, like, I have
it's
a computer
too much,
because I have to.
Yeah.
But I was perfectly
I have interns
before.
And assistants. They do all the computer stuff. I do what I want.
And you get social. You have a social media person. People are working
for
you.
But I do some of my social media. But I just, I don't like the whole thing. It takes up too much time.
But you're writing all the time.
All the time.
And how are you writing? What are you doing? Pencil, paper?
I'll sit on the bike at my gym and then I'll start emailing my assistant, you know, all my ideas, and then I just start working it, and I start working it, and I start working it, and then, you know, I riff, you know what I mean? And I have a pen and a paper, and I do that too, but mostly it's like I have everything organized, like, you know, in books. Mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm. You know, I saw the Joan Rivers documentary. I think it was the Joan Rivers documentary. Where she has all her jokes in the wall. Did you see that?
Right, of course. Yeah.
She pulls
amazing.
It out. Yeah,
so she has like almost a card catalog in her home in New York. She had almost like a card catalog with every single joke
really old
was on a piece
of
paper.
That's the way they did it. It was like this act. It's like building a car.
Yeah, the difference between her stuff and my stuff is her stuff is there's jokes. My stuff just ideas of jokes.
Yeah. You know something you can do now with the iPhone is if, you know, with Siri. Yeah, you can just record, but not only your voice, you could say, like, take a note, you know, remember this, and then it'll send to your email.
Yeah, I do that too.
Amazing, right? Yeah. Okay, let me ask you this. Your father, he never taught you to play the trumpet or an instrument?
Mm-mm. What?
I played the drums.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, I played the drums when I was a kid, but I didn't like the drums because the drums meant I was in the background, and I always wanted to be in the front.
Interesting. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right?
Yeah.
Because if you're in the background, you know what I mean?
But your dad, being a trumpet player and playing before all those amazing talents like Carol Burnett. And so, I mean, I'm just saying you kind of grew up seeing so much music around.
The music was mostly around me, like in the 80s. My brother Scott, he owned the Roxy in Pacific Beach.
Oh, interesting.
In
San Diego.
Yeah, in San Diego. And he had bands like Iggy Pop and Sister Sledge and Pat Benatar.
Wow.
And all those bands play down there. So as a kid, I was experienced to that. And then I got, you know, and then in the 80s, like all I did was go to bands. That's all I did was go see
music.
I've seen everyone.
I was always like that too.
From,
I'm still like that.
The Clash to, you know, the Rolling Stones to The Who to...
Also, you were growing up in Beverly Hills and in Hollywood, and so you're getting to go to all those venues.
Yeah, all the venues.
Right here.
The Hollywood Palladium.
I mean, the access you have.
Yeah, the access. Because you grew up in Pittsburgh, you know, Styx is coming next summer.
Right.
Get excited today.
That's hysterical.
I mean, no, but you didn't. You waited for concerts.
Is that where you grew up in Pittsburgh?
In Pittsburgh, yeah.
Pittsburgh's cool. A lot of hot babes out there.
Oh, I was going to ask you.
I went, the last time I was there, I went and ate at the Pimani Brothers.
Sure.
I didn't, it wasn't that good.
That's too bad.
Yeah, they gave me a bad sandwich.
What did you order?
Well, what everyone orders. The pastrami with the french fries and coleslaw.
No, I get double egg, and they all come with french fries and coleslaw.
See,
but
you need a native.
You could do, you know, it depends on the meat you want to eat.
Yeah, they fucked me.
Yeah, that is. That's too bad. Try again, though.
That have a turnover, it's like they're making millions of sandwiches. There's bound to be a dud every once in a while.
Do you know, I understand that Outback Steakhouse has bought Permane's Brothers, and it's going to go, like, boom, nationwide.
Wow. Well, that's
And now
suck.
We're all going to have fries and coleslaw. I know.
Well, all right. I'm going to ask you, because I grew up in Milwaukee, as you see in the documentary, Wisconsin. Have you ever played Summerfest in Milwaukee?
Yes, I've been. Yes, I did that. That was years ago.
Yeah,
that's huge. Yeah,
it's
obviously
a gigantic music festival. And when it started, when I was a kid, there was all these individual music stages and one giant stage for the main act. Yeah. I saw the Allman Brothers there, and I was "Why am I?" But I'm like, "Why am
I here?
I'm 12."
That's sick.
They had a little tiny comedy stage.
Oh wow.
That they put right next to the main stage where Eric Clapton is playing. Mm-hmm. And they'd bring out Jay Leno and be like, "Hey, how you doing?" And then suddenly Eric Clapton would start up and you couldn't hear a fucking thing.
Right. Wow, that's
amazing.
And
then it was amazing.
If you're from Wisconsin, then you haven't seen the documentary, right?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Okay, so you want to hear some of the towns that I was in?
Yes, tell me.
Antigo, Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
Wausau, Wisconsin.
Wausau, sure, that's where the insurance company is, Wausau Insurance.
Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Wisconsin.
Oh, yeah.
And that's spelled like E-U-C-L-A-I-R. Yeah.
It's spelled French.
The
part of Wisconsin was settled by the French.
But tell the people listening like how small those towns are.
Yeah, no. The biggest city is Milwaukee, which the metro was probably about 1 million.
Yeah, but Madison, those towns I just mentioned.
Those towns are probably easily 50,000.
Yeah, I was going to say 30,000.
Yeah.
Because the third biggest is Green Bay, and that's only 100,000. So after that, it goes down quickly.
And you wait after the shows, and you let the folks come up and take your picture, and they're selling t-shirts. And you wait, and you give attention to every person that wants your attention.
Well, because the way I look at it, I don't look at my shows from my point of view. I look at my shows from their point of view.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to understand.
That's brilliant, actually, because comedians don't do that. Most people in show business don't do that.
Yeah. Sorry, go ahead. I look at it from their point of view. Mm-hmm. They grew up with me. They saw me and Son-in-Law. They grew up with me on MTV. What's more important to them than watching me perform is to take a picture and saying hi to me.
Yeah.
That's the most important thing to them. Like, fuck even, like, performing. Like, that's like, I want to see him perform, but I really want to take a picture with him. I grew up with him.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is part of the gig.
What do you think about people now shooting comedians without their permission on their iPhones, perhaps working out material, or do you care? You don't care.
No, I think it's bad. I don't think people should shoot comedians, and that's part of the reason why Eddie Murphy, I think, doesn't perform anymore, besides the fact that he's a trillionaire. But I think part of the reason is because I think that he doesn't want people to see him develop something or say something that is not right, that can go viral. And then, you know what I mean? I think it sucks.
Yeah, it's
but you don't have a choice. You're fucked.
And then on a video, it's always taken out of context of like the room you're in. It's like it's midnight. There's 12 people. Everybody's drunk. You say something that gets a laugh.
Whatever.
You play that the next day. It doesn't seem.
But also another thing is like, you know, the way I was with women and you know, partying and stuff back then, you know, like, I wouldn't want to be that way now because you'd get shit on video. Look at Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He's just being a 21-year-old kid being rich.
Oh, my gosh. Let me tell you something. Yeah. If there was sexting back in 9th and 10th grade,
we would all be in jail.
Completely.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really upsetting.
You know, it's true because it's like, I just think it's fucked up that, you know, that everything we do is be seen. Everyone and you can feel it, feels like they're being watched all the time.
Yeah.
And it's just a bad way to fucking be.
Now,
you know, that's why I like the Midwest, because they don't give a fuck.
Okay, now hold on now. They show you in the documentary.
Sorry, I'm just getting worked up.
You go into a hotel room with a girl, and she says, I'm so turned on, or I'm so excited that the cameras aren't with us.
Yeah.
But you're hearing her say that.
Right.
So her microphone was on.
I know.
Well,
hopefully she won't get mad when she sees it.
But she's from Wisconsin, so here's what you do. Oh, geez, now that is out of line right there. And that's pretty much all that's going to happen. She's not going to contact a lawyer. She's not going to. I just want to ask, but like, say Eau Claire, Wisconsin, what kind of venue was it? An auditorium?
It's like a rock club.
Okay, it was a rock club.
Yeah, like a rock club.
Not the one below the strip club. That was.
Yeah, that was a comedy club below the strip club.
Yeah,
that's a real place. And see,
of course,
right, because when you do that, you're going back to like the 80s where you were. You would perform comedy in places that were not designed for comedy.
Yeah.
That was, did that all the time.
The good part about that, it makes your act actually more fun. Because you're not going up there kind of doing your material. You're kind of like riffing with the
crowd. Room is literally such a strange shape that you have to play the room. And
would prefer to play in a venue that isn't a comedy club?
I prefer to play to places that are just people are there to have a good time. So I don't care.
That's interesting.
I don't care what the venue is, because if you play a really shitty venue in a venue that's not good for comedy and you get through it, then when you play a comedy room,
a real room,
you feel a lot better and it's a better show.
Yeah.
So you don't want to get used to anything.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because I always think of Todd Glass, how he likes to go into the club before and make sure every menu is exactly, you know, every table tent and every candle is just so. He likes it very specific.
Yeah, well, that's good for him. That works for him.
Yeah. Right.
But he gets paid by the menu. How many menus are picked up?
So no, but it's interesting. You would even prefer, no matter what it is, even if it's chaos, if it's happening,
people are there having a good time. You know, I don't care what, you know.
Because you can be in the, like, there are comedians who can be in the moment of whatever's happening in this weird room, and there are comedians who are like, if I'm not doing my act by rote.
It's like you saw in the when I was doing the sound check in Wausau.
Right.
Remember when you saw the place I was playing, there were speakers in the ceiling?
Right.
And I got excited.
You were so excited.
I was like, this is going to be awesome because it's going to be terrible, which is awesome.
Yeah, right, because the sound is going to be dispersed.
It's like a car
dealership. Now you're in a grocery store and the music's above you.
I just have to tell you the name of, I won't do a little story, but the worst gig I ever had outside Milwaukee. The Waukesha County Holstein Breeders Association banquet. That's all. I don't need to tell you anything.
Did
else,
you kill?
Do I?
Yeah. All right. Listen. Two more things before we get to Shotgun Storyworthy, which I really want to do with you. Did you really pee in that water bottle at the end of the documentary, Polly? I was all like so into like how you're so sweet and you're such a good person.
I have a pissing problem. You didn't get that from the whole documentary?
Yeah. Not till the end.
You didn't see me pissing the whole time?
Well, I saw you pissing on the side of the road, and fair enough.
Yeah, but then you saw me go to Walgreens to get piss medication.
Yeah, but I just didn't think you'd do it right in the green.
Like, I didn't have a choice.
I know, but they said, you said, is there a bathroom here besides the one in the front? And he goes, no, that's the only one.
Yeah, which means I didn't want to go out there because all those people were out there. And all right.
But then after that, did you have to add the water to it? Because then you sort of played with it for a minute.
Well, it was one of those things I didn't like. We all know that the color of urine is yellow.
Right.
So if you mix it up with some water, then it's not as yellow. Then people aren't going to think it's piss.
See,
you have a vagina, so you've never pissed in a bottle. Every guy has pissed in a bottle.
Okay. The only reason that you've never done this is you can't.
Okay. You guys, look, the line is behind me. I messed up. Look, I crossed the line.
I'm assuming that climax is not that he pees in the bottle and then hands it to somebody and tells him to drink it, right? Just didn't want to go out to the bathroom.
Then you might throw the water bottle away. That's all. That's all I'm thinking.
Yeah,
it's become a prop then. Now you're a prop comic. Now you have a bottle of pee. You got to go for it.
The thing is, a lot of these venues that I play don't have bathrooms.
Yeah.
The only bathroom is for everyone else.
For the public.
So if I were to go out there and piss, then people would say, hey, Weeze, what's up, bro? Are you wheezing, bro? And I'm trying to piss. Plus, I don't like to see my audience before I go on stage anyways.
Yeah, I don't blame you.
Who was it? Jay Leno said that he would do his act at the Comedy Store, probably, and would immediately run to the men's room and sit in a stall, not to go to the bathroom, just to listen to people talk about him.
Wow.
After he was, just see whether people liked it or didn't like it.
Let me ask you something, Paulie. You had Andy Dick on your show, Interested. Boy, that was a good interview with Andy Dick. His son was with you, Andy's son. When you see somebody like Andy Dick and, you know, the train is out of control, it's off the tracks and it's rolling down and things are not going well. I know this. I mean, I don't know what I'm talking about because I've never had a friend like this. But there's no way for you or anybody else, I guess, to say, hey, man, I'm not trying to rain on your parade, but you're going to die here any minute. And you could say that and it doesn't matter. Is that?
Pretty much. I mean, it's the old saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
Yeah.
But Andy Dick, you can't make him not drink is the problem.
No, meaning you can tell someone so many things, but you can't like take their fucking hand and take them with you. And you know what I mean?
So isn't that crushing?
I completely. But I agree because, that's the way it is, because I know this from like.
There's so many alcoholics out there. I mean, everyone's an alcoholic, knows what I'm talking about. It's like, you're fucked up. Look at your life and. Drinking doesn't work for you based on how you are, you know, and, you know, you got to figure it out yourself.
But you can't tell anybody anything. That's my motto. And it's not negative. It's just
you
like,
can tell them, but it's like you can to
you
a
can't
point.
Convince anyone.
So that's the disease, I guess. That's the alcoholic disease.
He's got to wake up. He's got to wake up and be like, it's like Downey. Robert Downey woke up one day and says, I'm going to stop. This isn't working for me.
Yes. Yeah. I'm humiliated. I'm waking up at people's houses. I'm being hauled into court. I'm a public figure.
He hasn't
hit his
bottom yet.
You think nobody told Robert Downey Jr.
I believe you. I understand. And I had the good fortune of interviewing Sugar Ray Leonard this summer, and he hit a bottom with cocaine use, and where his trainer finally said to him, hey, Ray, you want your kid to know you're a junkie. And then he looked in the mirror, you know, it was kind of like that was his moment, you know, and then that was it.
But ready to hear it.
I understand. But I just was listening to the podcast Interested, and I just found it really. Because you're with his son. You're with Andy Dick's son.
That was
son.
Pretty heavy shit.
It was so fucking heavy.
Yeah,
That's my point.
Yeah.
And it's like, here we are listening to your dad. Mm-hmm. And so what was that like with you sitting with his son?
It was weird. You know what I mean? It's weird because he's saying the same thing that everyone else is saying. Andy, we love you. Get your shit together. You're going to die.
It's very sad.
It's very sad. And the thing that, to me, that was interesting about that particular interview is most father sons, it's always the kid that's fucked up and the dad is the one that's saying my kid's fucked up. Now it's the opposite.
Yeah. And so it's the child taking care of the parent.
Where they force adulthood onto a child well before they're supposed to. Suddenly you're 11 and your dad or your mom is passed out on the floor. Right. Suddenly you have to be the caretaker.
Hey, Paulie, you want to play some Shotgun Storyworthy?
Mm-hmm.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game where our storyteller spins the Storyworthy Wheel of Truth and tells a true one-minute story about the topic it lands on.
So everybody, say it with me.
Spin that wheel!
Fish? What do I say?
Story about fish.
Well, I like to have fish because every time I come back from the smaller markets, and how long? What did we do?
One minute story on fish.
Oh shit! Okay. No, a lot of middle America, the Midwest, these smaller towns, they don't have fish, and plus, if you're in these smaller towns, you don't want to buy their fish. It's weird, you know what I mean? That's like meat. You know what I mean? Or like steak or chicken, you know what I mean? So I love fish because it feels fresh to me.
Yeah.
And when I come back home, I love to eat raw fish.
Yeah.
You know, raw fish, sushi and stuff like
that. Yeah, me
too. So I just think it's like the yummiest thing. Like, whoever thought that raw fish would be, you know, our favorite thing in the whole world? It's
who was the
fish.
First person
yeah, who,
yeah,
right,
to
who
eat
is
that?
The guy who says, I'm not going to cook this. I'm just going to eat this fish.
Yeah. I don't know.
And then who's the one that said, I'm going to eat their eggs? You see those
and
little fish eggs?
I'm like, the snail, I'm going to eat
it's
that.
Just, it's pure protein and it just tastes really good.
When I grew up in Pittsburgh, we didn't have.
Is that 1 minute?
No, it was 39 seconds.
That's close enough. Don't worry.
When it comes to fresh fish or fruit, you know, growing up in Pittsburgh, fruit was either in season or out of season.
Mm.
There were either apples and oranges or there wasn't any fruit. So you would go to the waitress and you'd say, what kind of fruit do you have? And she'd say, fruits out of season.
No, they would have fruit cocktail.
Oh, yes. My God. It was like all
fruit cocktail with a little Heine. Yeah,
so disgusting.
It's funny. What you said about sushi just reminds me of every time, like, you drive to Vegas and you go through some shithole town in the middle of fucking desert, and it says, it's a sushi bar. And I'm like, where could this possibly become
it's not
from?
Worth it.
And how long ago was it taken out of the ocean?
Yeah.
I'm not eating sushi in Bakersfield.
No, it's not happening.
Well, listen, I can't thank you enough for coming and sharing your story with us.
Yeah, this is exciting.
It's really fascinating.
Great. That was great. Thank you very much.
Truly, your documentary coming up now on Showtime, Pauly Shore, Standing Alone.
You wanted to ask him about the ending.
Well, okay, about the ending of the documentary. But it's so sweet.
Mm.
And whoever shot it for you did a very good job. And the ending in your mom's house, in the fadeaway, and the dog. I watched that ending about 3 times.
Mm.
I kid you not.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Well, I didn't know that was going to happen.
Yeah.
It's a documentary, so you never know. You know, you never know what's going to happen when you shoot. So it was just one of those things.
The name of the filmmaker?
My friend Jake.
He did a great job.
Yeah, the shooter, yeah.
Yeah, he really did. Everybody should know out there, Pauly Shore Stands Alone on Showtime. It's not his shtick. It's not Pauly Shore shtick. It's not his jokes. It's his life.
Mm.
So it's very real, and you're very, very sweet.
Thank you.
Except
for when I piss in a bottle.
Well, that's an oddity,
well,
and I think
that separates the men from the women.
December 4th on Showtime at 8 o'clock, so this is December 1st right now.
That's right, and so December 4th, we're going to see the Showtime special.
Yeah, people
and
like it.
Really
I think it's
it.
Going to be cool because it's coming out after Thanksgiving, before Christmas. It's a time where a lot of us are alone.
Yeah.
And I think people relate to this piece. So
and thanks. It's also very Midwest. There's no Hollywood in it. It's just like normal.
Yeah, going to Eau Claire and they're going to. Yeah, you're right. When you're in Wisconsin, you're like, I need to eat a sausage. I need to eat a steak right now. You're never.
Cheese curds.
That's
discussing
them earlier.
Or poutine, right?
That's the Canadian version.
All right, you guys. We're going to wrap it up right about now. I want to thank everybody here at Sideshow Network, including Maria Spertolozzi.
Guess what? She loves cheese curds.
I love Maria Spertolozzi. And Hannah Banana is adorable, sitting over there smiling politely and sweetly. And of course, Heather Cooney and Sean Merrick and everybody here at Sideshow Network.
They're out doing heroin in the lobby.
And I'd also like to thank John Thomas Griffith. You know, he's the guy that wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
I have no idea who that is.
I'd also like to thank our storyteller tonight, Pauly Shore. Mm. Thank you, friend.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Yes.
And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn, saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Storyworthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.